Welcome back to the Nullified Take channel on YouTube, where we've got the TNT Takes for you on Australian Survivor Titans versus Rebels. You're joined by two Titans, Kahuna and Chris, and two Rebels, Mucky and Tom, in the podcast here, my fellow co-hosts. And let's go over to the sloppiest of Rebels, someone that said that he felt like he would play the game like Raymond. Mucky, how are you doing?
What?
You said you would play like Raymond when we did the cast. We did the cast reaction. You remember this, Kahuna? I'm not putting words in his mouth. He said this is probably the guy I would play the most like. It would be Raymond.
I mean, my chest here is much more beautiful than Raymond's chest here. But so I guess that's something that we've got in common, Raymond and I. But nonetheless, I'm doing amazing, Chris. Yeah, and I'm really excited to talk about the first three episodes of Titans vs. Rebels. It's a great start, and I can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts.
Yeah, I'm very excited to hear how everybody is sort of, where the thoughts are for the season, how people are feeling on it. Tom, you haven't been on the podcast for a while. I think the last time we had you on the podcast was for Traitors Australia. How have you been? How are you doing? How are you finding the season so far? I see you're amped. You've got your best Eden look on. You know, even though Eden is a Titan, you're doing him justice with that blue buff there.
It's actually purple. This is a villain's buff. Yeah, you know, I'm King George over here. I'm loving it. You know, I had to come back. I couldn't resist after such a good start to the season. I think honestly the best opening week of episodes for an Australian Survivor season ever.
Wow, very high praise from Tom coming into this podcast. I'm definitely keen to hear why you're praising this week so high. But before I do that, I have to go to the strong man. Jaden thinks he's the strong man of Australian Survivor, but he is the real strong man, BK Kahuna himself, the big Kahuna. How you doing, buddy?
Very good, sir. Doing really good, man. I'm excited for the season as well. I'm glad to see it's got Tom's stamp of approval. That always means a lot. That's right. You know what is standing out the most for me so far is the stark difference, because I as I get older, Chris, I'm getting more and more dumb and forgetful of old things, and recency bias is very strong. So last season of Australian Survivor feels like ages ago. I don't even remember, but in contrast to American Survivor, seeing the challenges and the physicality and I'm so hyped for it. Just because it's in contrast of watching that last season of American Survivor. Again, I don't want to start on the Australian thing, but seeing them next to each other, it's worlds different. And I'm loving it.
I'm one of those people, I hate to end the season, say, best season ever, best start ever. Like, I'm a slow burner. Like, I want to see the season in its totality, then marinate on it a little bit before I, you know, throw lofty praise out like that. And sometimes it frustrates people when we do our challenge recaps, because we've got people in our lives that always want us to immediately feel like this is the best cast ever or the best move ever, where I don't I'm like, all the worst, and I'm very slow to react to these things sometimes. But I do agree with you. Survivor 45 was a step in the right direction for sure for the franchise, but Australian Survivor, if they can give us a balanced edit this year, which has always been my criticism of Australian Survivor, that is the missing ingredient. If Australian Survivor can give us a balanced edit, it would hands down be the best show out there. I would agree with that. It's the only thing I can mark them down on. I think they've done a reasonably good job so far in the show. But again, I think we all know who the main characters are based off the first three episodes, who's probably going to be there deep in the game. And I'd love to get into that a little bit later on here in the live. But let's say hello to everybody in the live. We've got Jonathan here saying, this cast hit the beach and said, screw the 33-year-olds. Ouch. You know, if you're a 30-plus-year-old, you're potentially in trouble. But then again, they've got the middle-aged mafia brigade that's working in the Titan Stripe. So maybe if you're in your 40s, you'd be safe. This would be Kahuna's season. Chowder is saying exactly. Chowder says, not my Frankie. Thought she was going to win. Big call made by Chowder in our premiere when we did review.
Close.
Like if you by that logic, next season, Chowder, if you think someone's going to win, just go the opposite and say they're probably a first boot. And chances are You'll get it right. You'll get it right. Jonathan saying also under half remaining cast has 100% voting record. Yeah, they're playing a very strategic game, splitting votes very early on. Very impressed by that. So normal cast would be just all voting together, but they're thinking about their own behinds at this stage. Gabe saying the boys are back together and the Lee guy.
Gabe, this is outrageous. Remember, I was the only one who disliked Lee. Mucky and V were the ones who liked that that sexist.
No. Tom is a misogynist of podcasts, right? Oh. Thomas.
Tom must be happy with the Lee philosophy continues. Is it an inside joke with is this Survivor UK?
So he thinks that I clearly hate women. I don't know how.
Well, here's a little bit of someone that agrees with you. Our friend Snuffed is in the live. Riley, welcome to the live, saying, agree, Tom, great first week. Fury Tiger says, hey, guys, awesome start to Australian Survivor. It's our first all-newbies cast since Brain versus Broad and the second all-newbie cast since 2017. I'm hyped. And I do like the fact that they now at least hide the fact that they've got some celebs on the show and they don't call them celebs coming into the season. So that way it does truly feel like it is a completely unknown cast with no celebs playing this game. You know, obviously we've got Nathan, who's a previous AFL player, probably well-known. I'm sure there's a few other people that probably is well-known outside of the game as well. But one of the things I wanted to discuss and bring up, we're back in Samoa, and Samoa is now called the House of Australian Survivor. We're back home. Tom, how do you feel about this? Do you think we're in for many seasons in Samoa, similar to what Survivor US did? Is this the place that we're going to go back to, I think, in the future? And does it bother you?
Well, as a part-time Samoan, I'm really stoked that it's going to stay in Samoa for a long time. You know, it's going to be great for me. I've got my people there. You know, maybe when I'm cold and I'm hungry at nighttime.
Usos.
All my usos. You know, I got family there. You know, so I'll be all set. You know, so. I'm going to win next season.
Tom's getting in touch with me for a trip to Samoa so he can go plant an idol prior to getting cast on next season so he can go and find it. That's the big brain play. We should copyright these ideas over here. But Mucky, how do you feel about this? You know, Samoa, home of Australian Survivor, many seasons to follow from here on out. Do you think that it's something we as fans should worry about? Some fans like seeing different backgrounds and different scenery. How do you feel about it?
Well, I mean, it's the thing with like, they've already done a couple seasons in Samoa, right? But then they've tried other locations, and now they've gone back to Samoa. I think if it's not like American Survivor, because hasn't it been like since Millennials versus Gen X, they haven't left Fiji, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what, season 33 and then up to season 45? So I'm sure if they don't wait that long before changing location, like, yeah, just stay there for another couple of years and then find a different spot for a couple of years. Because only Outback for 2 years as well. So I think maybe they're just trying out a bunch of different locations and just see what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, fair enough. So great start to the season. We get everybody coming back to Samoa. I was sort of hyped. I thought we were going to see a bit of a marooning potentially with the big boat and all the Titans in it. Sadly, no real marooning happening with JLP being on the boat welcoming them all into the game. But you know, it's great seeing obviously the Titans coming in. You see the Rebels coming in with the speedboat separately. They're having a little bit of back and forth banter as the show starts here. What's your early impressions, Kahuna, of the Titans and Rebels tribe? Did casting get it right? Do we have a winning Titans and winning Rebels cast in your mind here this season?
So far, so good. I mean, maybe not from the theming perspective. Like we said, like you have to squint really hard to make it look, some people look like Titans, and you know, is this person really a rebel? Like, you know, the rebellious retail worker. But you know, like as far as the cast goes, I think a lot of that was done in order to achieve balance. Is Eden the same type of Titan as a Jaden and a Nathan? You know, no, not at all. But you need to, you can't just have Brain versus Brawn. Like, you can't just completely stack it. You need to balance it out. So then, you know, you get a bit creative with some of the terminology, et cetera. And you have the world's greatest and an awesome cinema manager as titans of industry. The cast so far, regardless of theme, I'm loving it. I think that they're really hitting it. And I will openly admit and flagellate myself that I was wrong on a bunch of them on my first initial takes. Garrick, Chris.
Garrick's the man. I came up for Garrick. I feel vindicated.
Absolutely vindicated. And so is he. I am eating crow in all forms because of Garrick. I do feel
and
like
Mark.
And Mark as well. Mark is awesome. I think I was pretty right on Tobias.
Yes, you had him pegged from the start.
Tobias. I knew Kelly was going to be annoying, but that's not a big call. That's not a hot take. Everyone knew Kelly was was going to be throwing 100 like straight at the bat. But the cast so far, like I can't think of anyone that I'm really like disliking or not enjoying so far on the show. Even Kelly, in her annoyingness, provides entertainment.
Mm. No, 100%. I agree with you 100%. Gabe says the theme, never care about it. It's the cast that matters, and they are delivering. Titans is on the Sinapu Beach from 2016. That is good to know as well. And then Magnitude Rev, welcome to the live as well, coming in with a little bit of hot tea. I think someone did spill some of this tea when we did our cast assessment, saying that Jaden and Winner knows each other outside of the show, so they were in the same TikTok vid months before filming on Survivor or on the season. So it does explain why those two have gravitated towards each other so early on here in this game. Snuffed Riley, disappointed not to see, says it's a stupid name, disappointed not to get Matt Rogers on the Titans tribe. Matt Rogers on the Titans the tribe would have been perfect. would have been perfect. Andre Lee making an appearance back on the Nullified Take channel. It's been a while, Andre, since we've seen you here. Great to have you here with $10 New Zealand coming in with our first tip here of the evening. Thank you so much. It will go straight back into the show so we can continue to improve it and add more shows here in the future. I really appreciate that. I'm Team Titan, though, but the Rebels kind of, like, it's hard to be Team Titan. Like, I was like, dedicated. I was like, everybody's going to be Rebels. Everybody's going to support the Rebels. But, you know, a Titan like myself, Kahuna can agree with this, being a Titan himself as well. We got to support other Titans when it comes to the game of Survivor, you know. But it's just not happening for our boys at the moment. Tom, what's going wrong for the Titans in these challenges? Because they keep failing every single time. And it's so frustrating to watch because they've got some really good physical players. They've got smart players playing the game, but it's not coming together for them in this three episodes.
Well, I want to point out one thing. I was spot on. I know I wasn't here. I wasn't like on the live. I was in the comments, but
you were in the live, but you weren't on the live.
Yeah. I was spot on with Nathan. He just thinks he's the man. He's completely oblivious and useless at this game so far. And I reckon, like, in challenges, he's actually not doing nearly as much as what he could do with, like, his massive rig and everything. Like, he could be doing way more work for the tribe, but, like, you see him in the first challenge, you know, he's up the top instead of down below with Jaden, like, lifting up the big heavy balls. Like, oh yeah, we really need your AFL skills to push like a ball down a ramp. Oh yeah, that's gonna help, thanks mate. But honestly, like, he
was all the guys too.
Yeah,
everyone pretty much Jaden. It was weird.
Just Rebels have brains, you know. Titans, they get handed everything in life, honestly. And Rebels
and Nathan's input was, Jaden, go back and be the anchor in this challenge. Like, that's going to make a difference when they've got all the women out there trying to push or pull this ball up the ramp. Like, it was just crazy strategy.
And not to mention, he, in the same same confessional, he says Frankie is like a sister. And also, she's pretty hot in the same confession. <Yeah. laughs> great work.
That's right.
Yeah.
Whereabouts is he from again? Is he Tasmanian?
Probably.
Can't remember. Let's have a quick look. Nathan, no, it's from Melbourne. Jeez, like, where did I decide to start my journey in Australia? All over here in Melbourne. Some of the comments that are coming out. I feel like Nathan is a special breed, but I feel like he's conflicted in his feelings. Like, he's like, I can't like her, so I have to say she's like a sister, but I kind of like her, you know, but she's got a boyfriend, which is the conundrum he struggled with while he was out there. But yeah, clearly struggling. And Mucky, what is it that, you know, makes Rebels throughout these episodes so good in the challenges? Because they were really good across the board. They came in as a ragtag team put together, you know, some big personalities in there. You wouldn't necessarily have come in saying that they were the bookies' favorites playing these first three episodes, but they did extremely well in all of the sort of challenges, except for the odd head-to-head tug-of-war kind of challenge where power would always dominate over anything else.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite interesting because I feel like Rebels work really well as a team, because on the Titans tribe, I think it's been said many times, there are too many cooks in the kitchen, right? There are too many leaders, not enough followers on the tribe, right? And you can kind of see that during the immunity challenges where you have people off doing like their own thing, but no one's really actually communicating with each other. But I will admit, Jaden, though, what an absolute challenge beast, right? Like, every time he's in a challenge, I just love watching him. And I think my favorite part, probably these three episodes, is when he was holding up the sack of coconuts and he was swinging it from side to side, and the laugh he has, like, just his laugh alone, oh, that was dying. Like,
you feel bad for him because he's like, he's kind of like, you know, who he reminds me of. He's Caleb from Survivor 45 Kahuna. He's like this athlete, naturally gifted athlete in a tribe that's just going down. And it's like, you know, it's hard. Like, the guy's going to carry his whole tribe on his back at this point. But clearly he's made for TV. He's a great character on the show. So I want to see him definitely up his game and improve as the season continues on. But it's going to be tough, especially that now that he is sort of pegged as part of the young fit group that he's in, to try and break into that, I guess, what was it, midlife mafia alliance. I don't know where he finds his spot there, but it was fun seeing him and Winner at least have their moment when, you know, Winner of all people, we had Winner as our winner pick for the show. And I mean, listen, we could not have gotten it any more wrong. This kid does not look like he knows what's going on strategically in the game, but Kahuna, he's lucky. He stumbles his ass backwards into the clue for the idol in these first couple of episodes. Nearly loses a tooth while doing so, but at least gets a little bit of luck in the game. But I don't know if you were frustrated like I was when he got this and he's like, I'll sit on it. I can go do this tomorrow. Like, it's like, no, yeah, you're going to go do it now. Like, he's way too chill for this game, in my opinion.
I thought that was like laying the clues at something, like, because that would like, oh, what if it gets washed away? It's like on a tree. And he's like, I'll do this. I was like, oh, it's definitely going to get washed away. Like, as soon as they planted that, he's going to like stuff up this island. It's going to be great. Yeah, Winner, I feel like of the people that we are saying, like, no one's being promoted as a celebrity, but we definitely know there was recruits. I feel like Winner was probably one of them, and Jaden having that prior relationship. And it feels like they've obviously got a relationship in the show, which is great, but neither of them seem like they know Survivor and are doing like a lot of strategy out there. They kind of just sort of clung to their group and found like the strong people who they believe to be their strong crew. And then like are just sitting on it and not doing anything and kind of waiting while there's multiple losses and they're stacking up and they haven't really tried to be strategic. Like you said, Winner stumbled into it. Jaden's being happy Jaden, which is great. He's amazing on TV, but I do worry that without a little bit of forethought, he's absolutely necessary right now for that tribe when he's not. Like, you know, he's not really making moves at the moment.
Can I just jump in on Winner, actually? Because I feel like he's actually an underrated player at the moment, just for the first week. So a comment here that Gabe actually brought up, Winner did jump the strong alliance, voted for Nathan. He was in on the split vote for Nathan. And I think while he's probably not leading the strategy at the moment, I think he's definitely being involved in a lot of the strategy talk. I think he is aware of that. He does have an idol. Like, obviously, he's not that big fan of obviously, he's not that big of a fan. He is obviously a recruit. But we've seen recruits, like, for example, David Gennaert, Matt Rogers were recruits, and they're massive names in Australian Survivor, right? So
yeah,
I think there's a chance that Winner could do really well this season and could potentially pull off some moves. But I think right now he's obviously still learning the game. So I think he's in an underrated spot. at the moment.
Yeah, listen, Mucky, every now and again you have a good take, and this was one of those. I've got to give it to you. You know, I do think Winner is someone that shouldn't be underestimated. He's probably playing the game right at this moment, where a lot of players are trying to play the game too hard, too fast. A lot of these players that went home early, that is the reason they went home early, is because they thought they were running the game. So I do think he's probably playing it right. Let's read a couple of the comments here. Aaron in the live, welcome. Always good to have you here. Magnitude Ref says, Rebels has a sport coach on the tribe. I think that might help to do with their success. We will definitely talk about Kirby, because boy, oh boy, did we have it wrong on her. She's playing a very strong early game. And I think we all were not as high on her when we did our cast assessment. So she's one of those players that also proved us wrong. Jonathan says, the Rebels have a coach on their team. The Titans have delegators. I don't know if Kirby's necessarily like stood up and actually took that leading role yet. I don't know about that, but definitely she's someone that is very strategic, but she's trying to hide it, right? I am fearful, and I don't know if she can do it long term, because she's already kind of stretching and doing a lot very early on, where people, if they can compare notes, she may get herself in trouble. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Gabe says, Winner got that lucky banana. Yes, he did. Winner did jump a strong alliance to vote for Nathan. Like you said, Viola is the receptionist on the Doghouse, also on Channel 10. Did not know that at all. I wanted to talk about, while we're talking about the challenges, for us, welcome.
Hey, for us.
That's my winner. Hey. That's my winner. Yeah.
No. That's our winner. Well,
yeah, like all of them.
Look at Tom here playing the Eden card. He doesn't just look like Eden. He's also now trying to be the silent hand behind the scenes that are moving the direction of this podcast and the narrative on who's chosen for us.
You just said Winner as your winner pick, and I was always on Ferris. Thank you very much.
No. For us was our first one. We had one winner pick for both of the trials. Winner was the second. See, I thought you said you were in the live. Lies. We're catching him in his lies here. He's playing the game exactly
he
like
he promised he'd take me to the end.
I never said that, but I did say Mucky's the first boot, though.
Yeah. Mark says that for us, wishes he's the invisible hand. Yeah. Something that Tom knows all about, trying to be the invisible hand here. Yeah, Kona, you go ahead.
The season coming up with like names, like as far as them like branding opportunities, the invisible hand, the cuddle crew, the middle-aged mafia, like they got some great things going on here. Even Kirby and Rihanna was Kelly and Beyonce. Like that one wasn't as good. They got to go back to the drawing board. But their branding is going hard.
What was the two V's? What were their alliance name? Viola and Valeria. They had a name as well. I can't remember. Two V's.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, the two V's or something like that. But anyways, that's something with the V. So it was blood on blood, skin on skin,
and the duos, and the potential for all these little like voting blocks that can just swing multiple ways. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, 100% for us. Mark is bold. Low
really?
Right here between. I didn't notice it. I did not notice. I was going to ask, while we're talking about the challenges, what did you guys think of our boy Tobias and him showing the little L every single time
constantly.
They won? Constantly.
I hate it.
I love
He's getting all the votes in the final, right? For us, it's taking him to the final so that he can be a GOAT. And not the good goat.
Been there before, man. You know, like it's gonna like. Are you expecting to win 100% of them? What do you think is gonna like? I hate that attitude. Like, play like you've been there before. If you're gonna win, like, win. You know, celebrate, but celebrate for yourself. He wasn't even paying attention to his own people. He was ignoring them in order to walk towards the Titans to mock. Like, I'm surprised he wasn't doing a Fortnite dance.
Yeah, no, 100%. 100%. I don't know what he's doing. He's in this. Yeah, like, any case, it was an interesting strategy. I don't know if he's watched the game before, but it's not going to make you any friends being out there if you celebrate that way. But let's talk a little bit about Frankie. Frankie was the first person voted out of the game. I think you kind of had this one pegged somewhat in our draft, you know, cast assessment. Kuna, when you spoke about her, I said, you know, salon owner, she's probably someone that have dealt with a lot of people. She can probably, and you said, no, she's from Bondi. It's a certain type of person that's going to go in there. It's she's probably going to not fit in with everyone. She kind of came across as a bit of a boss right in the beginning of the game, tried to take lead here, wanted to get the vote onto Jess very early on, because Jess made an observation that they've got three very strong women, which gives them all the same kind of strength and challenges. They need to diversify and have people that bring different skill sets, which is a great observation, but it really set her off. And she went on to this, I guess, witch hunt to try and get Jess out of the game here, which probably ended up in some ways, they both were equally as bad. They tanked each other's games early on here. But what did you think, Kahuna, of Frankie's game, and where did things go wrong for her here?
Yeah, it seems to be interesting that the setting the pace in the first episode and setting the tone, that arrogance seems to be the downfall. Like the people that, like, we see it a lot where as soon as someone has a confessional that, oh, I'm running this game, I'm in charge, like all of a sudden they're in trouble at tribal. Like it happens so often, but I don't know if these people haven't seen it, but they're giving the confessionals of I'm in charge, I'm a boss, I'm running stuff. And it just never works out that way, especially so early when numbers are so undefined, alliances are not drawn, like you don't know where you are, to be that confident that early and really ignore, like, I guess the room and the vibe and what people are kind of putting out there. Because I think her arrogance in that did come across, like that's what people were picking up, that she did feel like she was in charge. And we saw the same thing play out in other episodes as well. So it just seems to be like the ego and pride is the downfall so far.
Yeah, 100%. Tom, it's the dichotomy between, you know, having to be close to the people that you want to work with long in the game, but then also being social enough across the board where it doesn't feel like you're that close in the game with this specific group. We saw it in both tribes, the Rebels and in the Titans. Two four-people units were formed early on that kind of outcasted themselves very clearly to the rest of the tribe. How do you get that balance right, Tom, if you were to play Survivor? How would you play it? Like, you've got people you want to work with, but you don't want to make it too obvious, obviously, that these are the people that you want to go deep in the game with. You want other people to feel like they're potentially your number one as well.
Wait, what does dichotomy mean? Do you remember Nathan saying that in tribal? That got me on.
Apparently Google search had a spike in people searching dichotomy afterwards, is what I heard.
All of Nathan's friends just dichotomy.
I'm gonna get kicked out of Melbourne for saying that.
Honestly. No, but I'm not gonna lie. Like 50% of the reason why I really want to come on tonight is just seeing Frankie get voted out after seeing how much Char Dude like loves Frankie. That was fun. Sorry, Char Dude.
Fired at Char Dude.
I'm a cruel human being, but I love seeing terrible gameplay alongside like good gameplay, and just seeing like these strong people go, oh yeah, let's all like just like wash ourselves and not do any work and just isolate ourselves from the rest of the tribe. Like, yeah,
they need us.
That's a great idea.
The physical strength that we have. You know?
Yeah, but I think Frankie played awfully, but I think Nathan was playing worse, and he just got lucky that he is more jacked than Frankie. Like that. Like that's the only reason he's still there. Yeah,
Chadu just turned into Greta Thunberg here. How dare you? Frankie was my girl.
Frankie ain't my girl. So,
it was a masterful move here by the likes of, like, I feel like that specific tribe, Titans, the biggest player at the moment is Mark. It has to be said. Like, Mark is running that game. He's the true, you know, silent hand that's moving the pieces in my mind at the moment. There was a lot of people who made the, I think they did the cross-reference between Game of Thrones with, what was his name, Varys, with the bald head, who was also the hand the king, and he's the silent hand in this game. So we're kind of seeing a little bit of that, because he's in the back end doing a lot of the dealing, the wheeling and dealing. And I feel like Kahuna, I called it on Mark. I said, the guy's got some experience. I feel like he could be a low-key threat coming into this thing. He's been behind enemy lines. He's not just the politician that's been, like, you know, no shots at George because he's one of the best, but I felt like he was very well prepared, because not only does he understand politics and how to wheel and deal and sort of do that part of it, but he's also been behind enemy lines. He's also gone to war-torn sort of places that will give him, like, I feel like a skill set. It's almost like if you put George and Mark, who won the season a couple of seasons together, he's like their love child somewhere in the middle, almost coming into the season. I don't know if he can play the whole game without getting found out, but it's a very solid start from Mark here, taking the numbers very early on, getting someone like Eden close to him that he can work with, who's a big fan of the show as well, and getting then the other two ladies there with them as well to form this, you know, middle-aged sort of alliance in the game. And I don't know how they got the two Vs in on it, because it wasn't really explained. I thought the two Vs would be closer to the jock types, but clearly he had enough of a connection there.
And I think that was Mark, like, you know, diplomacy, you know, working its magic. I was wrong on Mark. I thought, again, like the interactions that a international diplomat has is not going to be, you know, everyday common Aussie kind of connections. And I was wrong. Like someone said in the comments, Gabe said he's the social butterfly and everyone likes him. And like
he's doing it low key.
Yeah, absolutely. And happy for, and look at the backfire that happened, the move that he said, like, I'm happy for Jess to take the credit. If she thinks she's making that move, let her make that move. That again is the invisible hand, who also happens to freaking swim like a dolphin, like, you know, coming up challenge beast as well.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of everything.
So, yeah.
He was up against Raymond, who swims more like a rat. So, like, it wasn't too much
competition. Yeah, I saw that Raymond was like slow out the gates. I thought, I was like, did Mark splash him in the eye or something? Because he was like,
I honestly believe, like, there was someone earlier on in the live that said that, see, they need to cast more fans, super fans of the show. It'll make for a better show. The problem that you have is that if you cast only fans of the show, like the US is now doing, you get all the Raymonds on the show and you don't get the contrast. You know what I mean? Like you want the contrast. I don't want the show to be full of super fans, even if it means that if we apply for the show in the future, there's a lesser chance of us getting on. I'm okay with that if it's going to make for a better show, because we've got people like Nathan who gets overconfident and cocky early on and doesn't fully understand the game. Like that to me is more entertaining. It's like a softer George. Snuff says, don't come for my fellow Coastie. Everybody loves Raymond. Hey, listen, Raymond is awesome. Like he's fun to be on the show. What I'm saying is I don't need 24 Raymonds on the show. Like give me variety.
I love laughing at Raymond. Like Mucky said his favorite part was the Jaden laughing. My favorite part of the episodes was the final round of the tug of war when it was Carrick and Raymond versus Flippin' Charles and Eden. I'm like, oh wow, this is the tug of war game of the century. And to see both Garrick and Raymond, I don't think Raymond was pulling. Like Garrick was pulling. Raymond was doing everything there. And also, they were standing upright. Like, have you never played tug of war before? You need to like lower your center.
Yeah. 100%.
Oh, it was so laughably bad. I had the best time watching it. Yeah.
And no, the best was when Charles celebrated afterwards, and he was like, you know, like just jumping. Yeah. And Eden is like, "Are you not entertained? Were you entertained in that tug of war?" What if you thought of Eden's movie references? In fact, I think, Tom, you're probably a little bit more into the film side of things. What do you think of Eden with his movie references so far? We've had a little bit of Gladiator. We've had The Godfather. What else? Jurassic Park.
Look, I'd prefer... It's a bit cringe. If I was doing that kind of thing, I would like reference really niche things. Like things that no one would understand except for like one person. But like when he started, are you not entertained? I'm like, calm down, mate. Like you beat an old man and Raymond. Like don't celebrate too much.
To be fair though, like I don't think anyone was looking at Eden and Charles as, you know, challenge beasts either. Like I think they were like matched up specifically to just be like the dregs against the dregs.
Yeah. More than dregs, honestly. It was like a half dead hamster versing a monkey without hands, you know. That was the battle to me. It was hopeless.
Missed that one, Riley. Good one. Terminator as well in there as well. I can't remember the exact one. Was it Hasta La Vista or what did he say? It was when he was voting. I can't remember. I think it might have been that. But let's talk about, you know, we have a lot of fun with the Edens of the world. Let's talk a little bit about someone that all of us kind of, I feel like we had a pick correctly. Kelly, we said she could potentially be a first boot. And I do stand by that. I think she is someone, she got very lucky so far that, you know, there are people playing the game very blatantly around her that made her less of a threat. Like, you should never play the game emotionally. So as soon as Alex and Petta started going for her because they were just annoyed by her, like, that's never enough of a reason to want to get rid of someone in the game. As soon as they get into your head, as soon as they start having an effect on your emotional psyche, you're really not thinking clearly. And that's what happened with them targeting Kelly, being together so closely in the game. I do think that she's not meant to be here for very long in the game. And if she is, it's going to be entertaining to watch to a degree. But I do want to call something out, because I found it really cringe how Kelly is hitting on the guys. Like, and I don't know if anybody else has sort of gotten that. Yeah. Like, I feel like that we talk a lot about this, and this is something that Twitter and social goes off when men do misogynistic things on the show or does something wrong. But it seems pretty silent on how she's hitting on the guys, which sometimes feel like it's not like received in a way where they're enjoying the way that she's hitting on them out there. If this was a guy, sort of, you know, at the reward challenge when Nathan was there saying, oh, all I need with him is like one night. If a guy was doing that stuff with a girl half his age, I feel like it would have been very different out there. What's your thoughts, Kahuna, on like how Kelly's coming across and just some of the comments and things that she's doing on the show? To me, it comes across as a little bit, it feels off. Are you still there, Kahuna?
Look, I'm saying
strategically dodge the question.
Called Viola Muscle Mummy the other day. So I appreciate, you know, the finer forms and people looking good and all that sort of thing, right? But she's doing it like to their face. So like, not even just like whether it's sexual or whatever, which it is, it's just flat out rude. Like to call people out like that and make them feel completely uncomfortable, and like pointing to Alex's like buddy smug. By the way, I don't know when that became a thing again, that men started wearing budgie smugglers. I don't know if it coincided with women showing their ass a lot in G-strings. Like, they started showing less, so men started. I don't know which one I'm like, if one has to come with the other, maybe I make that sacrifice. But when the budgie smugglers came back in so strong, I'm weirded out by it, man. I'm like, why? Why are you doing that? Here's the real topics on TNT.
Yeah. Oh. No, it's very strange, and we've got a few people here in the chat talking about this as well. Kelly in episode one, I feel sorry for the younger guys. Chardude saying, I was cringed out by Kelly as soon as she spoke. The Hangout Room says, yes, Kelly needs to stop and jest at the same thing with Jaden. It's so off-putting. Gabe also says, yeah, she needs to tone that down. I'm sure if someone told Kelly it made them uncomfortable, she'd stop, unlike in season 39. And I feel like it's one of those things where a lot of men, when they're on the show, they may feel uncomfortable by it, but it may come across as like them, you know, like guys need to be tough and just suck it up. That's the mentality that's out there for men. Like, if they're getting hit on, even if they don't want it. But I think it's not on. It's not cool. Nobody's probably told her this before. She does come from a different, she does come from a different generation as well. So that may play into it as well. Marcus says, agree, if someone like Nathan said that comment to Kelly, he would get teared apart on Twitter. It's so wrong, and glad you guys called it out. Wait, isn't she a psychologist?
Imagine,
aren't they good at reading
people? It was like Garrick.
Yeah.
Kelly to Nathan Sarah is like Garrick to Sarah or something. Like, yeah, it would be even worse. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, if he was making comments about her being in a bikini or something like that, I just feel like it would have. And this is the double standard that we get in society sometimes, where it doesn't get called out both ways. So I just wanted to mention it. I'm not going to make a big thing out of it, because I'm sure that there's a lot of other people that will call that out as well. I don't necessarily want to have the whole podcast be a downer, but something that just hasn't sit right with me completely. I'm going to move on from that to, you know, the observations that were made here early on, certain people getting very close in the game early on. For us, Night One notices that, you know, Petta and Alex is getting very close. Sarah and Tobias are getting very close in the game. So immediately that storyline is created that these are the people that are going to be closely together. Because Mucky, it does show something when people are snuggling together at night. I think it was Boston Rob that said, if you want to know who's working together, have a look at what the sleeping arrangements is around camp.
Yeah, it's it's not just necessarily who's sleeping next to who. It's the the sandwich making, as Faraz pointed out, right? It's it was gross, exactly. It's quite a thing. When I saw those people hugging, the only thing I could think of was Michaela talking about Taylor figging millennials versus Gen X, you know, like calling them out on how disgusting it is. But yeah, you know, it's sometimes, you know, happens on the island where, you know, people do get very comfortable together, but you just have to make sure that that's not presented a lot to the tribe, right? You know, similar to how we talked about Nathan, you know, Frankie and Jaden always hang out in the water. It definitely seemed like throughout the whole third episode, it was the four of them always hanging out and do something. You know, if you saw one, the other three were pretty close by as well. So it's at some point you do kind of need to like actually branch out and separate rather than just stay in your own group.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Tom, you go ahead. Look like you wanted to say something.
Oh, I mean, if I was on Survivor, I'd only be cuddling the homies.
yeah,
too risky. Like, like either the homies or like the Kellys. Like, as painful as that would be, like no one's gonna think, oh, Tom and Kelly, geez, they're hitting it off, aren't they? Well, it's a naughty sample. No one's seeing that. No, so like I wouldn't go anywhere near someone that people might think, oh, is Tom attracted to that person? No, thank you. I don't want that. Wait, on Survivor.
So in this season, you'd be like cuddling Garrick, is what you're saying. It'd be like, there's no attraction Garrick. There. It's just, I feel like Garrick will be the guy who'll give off a lot of body heat in camp as well.
He's a bit of a silver fox, you know, like people might think that there's a connection there. No, I was thinking.
Are you Big Spoon or Little Spoon?
Oh, I'd want to be the Little Spoon so I can easily get out. I feel like on Survivor, like people like would go to the toilet a lot at night, right? Like you don't want to wake everyone up, so I'd want to be like on the very edge so I can just sort of scoot away when anyway I've thought about
giving
this
too much of your trade secrets away on the podcast if you're ever out there.
I'm only giving the small strategy. I'm not giving any of the big stuff
put that in the casting video that you will cuddle with the homies.
I'll like, cuddle the old men.
Yeah, the old men. They'll put you on there. They're like, we're getting this guy. He's making great TV.
Come here, Garrick.
Gabe says, Thomas, like, get over here, Garrick. Need some cuddles. Gabe says, Michaela, right? You're nasty. You haven't taken a shower or brush your teeth. it's true. It's true. Like, yeah, it's interesting how people get it on Survivor. But listen, you know, love does strange things to you if you're out there on the island. I did want to say, so in this episode, we've spoken about quite a lot in episode two, the person who ends up coming under fire is going to be Jess. And I knew she was in trouble as soon as I saw the first episode, because there's something about people that are like really good when it comes to being academics, but they have that disconnect between like putting like theory into practice. And I feel like she's one of those people that, you know, theoretically she gets a good strategy. She understands that we need to diversify the strength in the tribe. She needs to get an alliance together, but she doesn't have the social skills, Mucky, throughout this game where she even like basically flops her own game at tribal council by admitting that she was the person who voted out Frankie after Nathan was on the warpath the whole day trying to figure out who it was. And she feels the need to own that move in front of them and gloat at tribal council. Showed a real lack of like social awareness from her here. And I thought that Mark and Eden, they both played her so perfectly because they're like, we'll let her think she ran the move. We'll gaslight her until she believes it. And she's going to run around and dig her own grave. So well played by them. But, you know, what did you think of Jess's game as a whole? And where did it go wrong for her?
Well, you know, I actually think it went wrong much earlier than Tribal Council. I think it went wrong when they got back from the challenge and Jessica was like, you know what? Yeah, I did lead that Frankie vote. And I'm going to lead this next vote. Let's try and take out Eden, one of the few social players that actually saved me from the last move. But something that just did though, and I was quite worried for Eden actually, because we started to see him freak the hell out, right? His name was getting brought up, even though it's only getting brought up by Jess, and he starts making split vote plans and stuff like that. I was telling Tom this, we're chatting off here. If I was Mark in that position and I've got like someone like a close ally that's like insanely paranoid and it's like scurrying off making a bunch of plans, at some point you do have to cut them. Yeah. Right. And so I think Eden is actually Mark's shield, where I felt Mark and Easy just throw Eden under the bus because he's just going to be paranoid and bombastic and stuff, sick of his name is brought up. But yeah, just going back to Jess, it was I feel like it all went wrong when she targeted Eden. I think she like read that completely wrong, and then it really just like sunk in at Tribal Council. Like at first, I kind of thought that oh yeah, she knows that she's going home, and that's why she's just trying to own the move. So then she has something kind of similar how Rogue did her big thing of I demand that the tribe vote me out. You know, I thought Jess was doing something great. Similar. Yeah, it was the best move of Heroes vs. Villains, straight up. But yeah, I do think Jess was actually like really blindsided and actually had no idea that she was getting voted out. So
they just gaslit her so much that she believed she was running the whole thing and was untouchable going into that. Totally agree. It's an interesting comment there by Gabe. Jess needed a Caleb out there, kind of almost like an Emily situation, where Emily came across as a bit of an academic as well. But I think Emily was even more aggressive in her gameplay from the start than what Jess was. She made Jess look pretty mild in comparison. Cooper saying, did you guys know that every Survivor episode has a title this season? Episode 4 on Sunday looks like it's going to be another good one. I did notice that, but I didn't really take it in, to be honest with you, all that much. I'm not normally a titles guy. Like, I don't normally take in the title as much as just watching the episode outright. But yeah, I'm glad that they're doing that. I'm sure the fans are loving it as well, getting a little bit of a sneak peek ahead of time. At the moment, I'm literally, but I've been so busy at work, I don't even have time to look at social. Like, a lot of what we're discussing here is just me sort of spitballing. I don't really know all the interactions online and what's going on. Tom, have you been following the socials on Survivor? Is there anything that stood out for you so far?
Oh, no. Whenever a Survivor season comes on, I mute every single Survivor-based Instagram page because last season I got spoiled on Haley's boot. So like that episode would have probably been a great one, like without knowing that, but it was kind of mid.
Didn't you feel like, okay, this is the start of her winning the show? She's probably going to come back in the next two episodes and win it.
Oh no, I didn't think she's going to win, but like,
would have been so. It would have been so Haley.
Yeah. Oh, don't get me started. I mean, she's by
default.
We're going to
get the fans upset at you, Tom.
By default, the worst Australian winner. She's better than Chris Underwood over in flipping America.
Hey, like, hey! You clearly haven't seen the challenge.
Oh, in Survivor. Anyway, she got booted, so therefore she has to be at the bottom of my rankings, even though outside of that, she played a much better game than like pretty much almost every winner in Australian Survivor so far. I know Gabe's going to have a field day of this. I'm saying something negative about a woman. Oh, no. Sorry, Gabe. Yeah.
Tom being typically Tom again on the podcast. No, I get what you're saying. I don't rate her as high as a winner, but I rate her very high as a player. Which I think is two different things. Mucky, you're someone that's normally, like, you're always on the socials, you always know what's happening next. What's the hot takes out there at the moment? Is there anything that we should know about?
I mean, I haven't really seen anything that juicy, really, that's out there. Everyone loves Valeria and Viola, I believe that's how you say their names. Yeah, so I just have to bring up typical Tom. Yeah, it's very, very typical Tom.
Lee was robbed.
I haven't seen really anything too juicy out there. It's I feel like, you know, overall people are loving this season, people are loving this cast. I think it's a breath of fresh air that on both tribes that the minority alliance are your typical really strong like alpha type players, right? And it's sort of more your nerdy, more like strategic, more smaller players are actually on top. And even someone like Kirby, you know, I haven't seen much love or praise for her online yet.
Really?
Well, I mean, just from what I've seen, you know, I've also, similar to Tom, been trying to stay away from a lot of social media stuff. But yeah, I'm really impressed with Kirby so far. Like, for someone who's into like AFL, you know, with most AFL players, we don't really get that many strategic or, you know, massive gameplay type players from that sort of field. But Kirby's killing it. I love Kirby. Yeah.
Yeah. We will talk about Kirby in a bit. I just want to read a few more comments. Hangout Room says, Jestamy is a pick-me girl. I think she said Eden's name because she wanted to replace Frankie in Nathan Hot Boy Alliance, and Nathan said Eden's name first, and she claimed it as her idea. Wow. So it's a good observation. Could be true. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, I can see why she would have wanted to replace Frankie. Chardit says, oh my God, same. I'm not looking at any comment section or any Reddit pages because I got spoiled last season. Jonathan saying the only players to make merge in Oz Survivor after being voted for in episode one tribal are Pia and Haley. So Jess had a very uphill battle if you're superstitious. Kiwi, welcome to the live. Danny saying, hi guys, greetings from Austria. Called me too soon though. I'm in the middle of watching episode two. Hopefully we get you coming back to this after you've seen episode three. We've seen that one. Everyone loves the cast. We have underdogs, villains, and hilarious characters. Kirby Lucina, I can kind of see that a little bit. She is giving a little bit of Lucina vibes out there as well. Did we want to talk about Eden at all and how he freaked out, Tom? Like, is there something that we as fans can learn from this? Like, going into the show that, you know, he said he thought he was prepared. He's a big fan of the show. He's seen it all. But, you know, until your name gets mentioned and you're out there, you don't really know how you're going to react in the moment. And he did not react to it very well. His boy Mark tried to protect him from himself by not telling him that he's a target, but it all went pear-shaped when he eventually did find it out.
Yeah, look, I mean, the moment I saw his mustache, I didn't have high hopes for him, but I mean, he started off really well. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, actually, he's good. But I'm going to call him like a middle-of-the-road player. To be honest, I don't think there's too many people in this first week that we've seen who are playing like great games. I think like there's maybe like one or two people in the Rebels tribe, and I'd say Mark's the only person playing like a great game on the Titans tribe. I
agree with Mark. Yeah, he's definitely head and shoulders above anybody else in Titans right now.
Yeah, I honestly thought, because I didn't think much of him before the season, he's probably my favorite player. Like, and I'm so surprised. I didn't think I'd like this guy at all, but I reckon he went into the season thinking, I've got all these great strategies. And then his tribe just sucks, and he's like, oh guys, I kind of wanted to do this really cool move, you know, like it was gonna be pretty cool, but everyone sucks so much. Like, oh, I'll just like, I won't do anything. I'll just win easily. Oh,
who's this? Who's this? Mark.
Mark, it's like his tribe, like half the tribe.
He's like, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to do anything. They're creating chaos for me, and I can just sit back.
Honestly, he's just got to swim fast and be bald, and he's gonna win.
Yeah, but you see, Snuff, this is my problem with Australian Survivor, and you know this because you podcast. For those who don't know, Snuff Riley podcasted the whole Brains versus Brawn season with me when we were on a different network, and you know this about me because you've podcasted with me before. I really hate the fact that the show makes it so obvious who to focus on. Like, Charles not getting much airtime tells me he's most likely not winning, and I'd be happy to be wrong. There was times last year where Liz kind of faded away and then came back, but I feel like last year is not a great season to look at when it comes to winner edits because they had returning cast members that they were always going to give airtime to. So this season will be a better reflection to see how much of an edit do they give their winner, how much of a non-edit do they give people who don't matter as much. But Charles seems like a likable guy. He seems like he's also in the know. It's just we don't know what he's doing. We haven't heard much strategy from him, so it's hard to rate him at this stage in regards to how he's playing the game. Gabe says, Eden messed up for safety, understands throwing a vote, but making four people vote Nathan ruined Mark's whole Titan unified facade, facade? That's right.
Yeah.
Now Nathan and Jaden realizes that they're on the bottom and will jump and swap. And that's a very good observation. I agree with Gabe on that. Nathan looked really annoyed by the end. And I do think Nathan, if he gets an opportunity, he will jump. And that was the one good thing Raymond actually did do in all of these episodes when he was talking to Faraz in one of the challenges. He said, that group there, the young boys, they're going to get together if they get to the merch. So we have to be very careful about that and sort that out. So it was a good observation that he made. The Hangout Room says, I just can't put my fingers on it. I just don't trust Eden. She couldn't put a finger on it because it was not her idea. It was Nathan. She was a pawn again. It was sad to watch. She didn't really have her own strategy because Nathan was the one that said, let's do Eden. And she just kind of went along and tried to make it her own idea. Mucky.
I've got a theory about Nathan, and I floated this past Tom. Could Nathan be the Reynolds of the season? Like Reynolds from Karamoan. So hear me out. So Reynolds and Karamoan you know, he thought it was he was the hot shot. He was the big guy, the big alpha, strong muscle guy. Yeah, he was a big kahuna. He was, you know, swimming in the water with his missus and, you know, with his boys. And then it's at the bottom at the start, right? And he can't quite make his way off the bottom, but he doesn't get voted out because they desperately need him in challenges, right? Yeah. And then he just somehow makes his way into merge, still on the bottom.
I think Reynolds had more game. I think Reynolds had more of a strategic mind than what Nathan has. I just don't see much going on upstairs for Nathan, like when it comes to the strategic side within Survivor. Even like the comment that, you know, Kelly was like, oh, yeah, the girls want to know, are you single? Like he went back home and like had to brag with Jaden, like, oh, you know, the girls there really are into me and I could use this angle. And he just comes across as like that jock airhead type of person. Like, I don't know. I could be wrong. I'd be happy to be wrong for him if he does come out swinging. I just don't see it happening for him. I don't know. I just don't. Yeah, some people are saying Simon 2.0, but less funny. Simon was at least funny. And
Simon tried, though, right? Simon had strategy. It never came off for him. He never pulled it off, but he certainly took his shots. And it seems like Nathan's kind
and his
of
read
just,
was
you know,
right.
Yeah.
He just couldn't execute. His read was right to get rid of George. So he just could not execute that move the whole season. Gabe is saying Nathan is our Drew Christie type Titan villain for this season. So, yeah, we do go into this last episode. And this third episode was a bit of a mess for the Rebels because they've had such a great run up until this point. But the Cuddle Alliance get together. They are tired with the status quo. Kelly is really annoying them at this point. And they actually do one of the cardinal sins of Survivor by wanting to throw a challenge. And I am so against it. I feel like the only time the throwing a challenge makes sense is when you've been in a swap and the numbers are good on your side and you've got a loyal number on the other side that potentially is going to get taken out before you get to emerge and it's close to merge, throw the challenge. Save your number, get rid of someone you're not loyal to going into the merge. Otherwise, in this scenario, to me, makes absolutely no sense. Tom, what do you think about the fact that they threw this challenge? Because momentum is such an important thing, and they're giving momentum right back to the Titans here by finally winning one.
I mean, like I said, I love watching terrible gameplay. The worst part isn't even the fact that they've never been to tribal, so they don't even know like who are their numbers. Like the I don't like it, so I'm gonna have to do one of these, you know. But there we go. So like they don't know their numbers. They're just assuming they got the majority because they're like what they're hot people.
So is that, cocky.
Anyway, but like. The worst part is they're laughing. It looks like something bad happens during the show. Oh, we're not strong enough. That's so funny. Like what? Like I mean, Garrick's getting lots of praise for sniffing out like the fact that they threw it, but like, I'm sorry, a 7-year-old could have figured it out. I mean, Garrick, I love you. I still want to cuddle you, but like a 7-year-old could have figured out that they were throwing the challenge. I mean, don't laugh when your team is
Raymond
losing.
Did. When you say 7-year-old, Raymond figured it out.
Yeah, I guess Raymond's the equivalent of a 7-year-old. Yeah, so I'm so mean to Raymond.
Tobias in the challenge saying, "Why am I helping?"
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Out loud. He said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah, just.
Judge would say Cuddle Alliance deserve it. They haven't watched Survivor Redemption Island. When they throw the challenge to vote out Russell for the tribe, it ends up being destroyed. So for those that have never played Survivor before, there's a couple of rules. Survivor 101, I'll give this tip for free in the future. You know, you'll have to wait until I get on the show and I'll put on a clinic on how it's done. But Survivor 101.
First boot.
Survivor 101. Do not couple up. First rule. Second rule, do not stand out to be a leader in your tribe early on. Third rule, do not throw a challenge because you never know who's going to end up going home at tribal council. And four, if you have an idol and you're uncertain and there's shots being taken at you, play the damn idol. All four rules here, Kahuna. None of them were followed. What did you think of this terrible gameplay by the Cuddle Alliance?
Again, just complete and utter ego. That there's no chance anything could go wrong because we're so in charge. We're so privileged in this game to feel like I don't even understand. Like maybe it's my own anxiety or whatever it is, but I can't even ever imagine just feeling that confident in a game where backstabbing is a thing. Like how do you even sleep at night feeling that we're just going to literally throw this game and make it obvious. Like, that's the bit as well. Like, it's not that they threw it, but, you know, like, George and Shawnee threw last season, and they made it obvious on purpose to send that message. Yeah. Like you said, Chris, when George did the whole, like, we've got a hostage, you know, like,
this was great TV.
Absolutely. And there was an upside, like you said, if they've got, you've already swapped, or you, maybe even if you're going into the merge and you know that people on your team are going to flip, maybe then, like, and flip the numbers. But putting yourself at risk when there was literally zero upside beyond getting rid of someone that annoyed them, it was like completely emotional. When we say there was no strategy, like, what was the plus side? What was the upside of actually getting rid of a number at this stage in the game? Like, I don't even know. They didn't even try to justify it. There was no, like, here's why we should do it. They're just like, hey, we're bored. We're awesome. There's nothing that could, what could go wrong? Let's mix it up a bit. Like, man.
The Hangout Room here saying, we are the majority, 4 out of 12, do hot people not know how to count?
some of us went up to Kirby,
like, I was just going to say, does it mean that if I know how to, does it mean if I know how to count that I don't qualify as hot? Is that what we're saying here?
Well, Kahuna had mentioned it, but it also happened in the first episode where Peter goes up to Kirby. It's like, oh, I think you should just join the majority with us.
Yeah.
You know, and then Nathan did the same thing as well. We went up to Carolyn and Kitty, I think. And it's like, honestly, if you just join, like, Frankie and I, we'll literally just carry you. Like, we'll just carry you.
To the end. 4 out of 12, not it. No. Only attractive people can count.
Yeah.
Unattractive people can count. You heard it here first. Only unattractive people can count. Only unattractive people read, apparently, or do any kind of math. Listen, yeah, what a bad move. But let's talk about someone that, you know, I know Mucky has been holding it in the whole episode. He wants to talk about this person, Kirby, her gameplay here this episode. Kirby, yeah. How did she do? Because you've brought her up a couple of times. We've kind of held off from talking about Kirby. You know, she was really, you know, for us, it's been a big part of the narration, but I feel like there is no for us without Kirby here, who's actually the one that throws him a bone and does end up going with his alliance, working with him to not follow the Cuddle alliance in the game. She's the cool kid. Everybody wants to work with her in the game. Do you feel like she played this as best as she could in this episode?
Yeah. I mean, an unexpected trio I did not see coming was Faraz, Garak, and Kirby. Like,
very unexpected.
That one took me by, you know, complete surprise. And I loved what she was doing. You know, she immediately sussed out the Cuddle Alliance and then made an active plan to go against it, but then also made a counter plan against it as well. It was like, well, we can still keep those numbers by just being a part of their split vote, because if it's, pretty much a much better version of Moana, exactly. My only thing, though, which I know that
I agree with Charted.
Oh, I think there's a chance.
A little bit. Could,
okay. Like, okay. Mucky is for the move. So, Mucky, finish your thoughts, and then we're gonna have a good old fashioned showdown with Tom giving the counter argument here on the podcast.
Okay, I think it's a good move simply because then you can sort of sway back and forth between both Atlantis, right? Like, yes, I understand it could backfire, but I see more pros than minuses for this move, because the people like Alex, like Sarah and Tobias, like, obviously there's a chance that they may not be as forgiving, right? So if she keeps their relationships solid going into a tribe swap and stuff, they're going to have her back, right? Whereas if there was no, whereas if she just voted for Peter with everyone else, maybe they're not as willing to work with her in the future, thinking that, you know, she was part of the alliance.
Yeah, Tom. Yeah, I'm thinking, right, you're probably thinking
Tom probably versus thinking down,
you're probably thinking down this line, because that was my thoughts as well when the move was done. It kind of felt like Kirby did this move on her own.
I think it is all right if, like, maybe I think it's only a good move if Ferris, like, would have told her to do it, like told her to be a secret agent. But if she's coming up to them,
oh, so the
like,
woman can't, what? She can't make
no.
All right,
Dave, yeah, quiet, okay? No.
Listen, oh gosh.
Okay. So
yes, sir. Well, what should I do, sir?
Kahuna.
You walked into that one, Tom.
Well, it doesn't matter what gender her ally is. It just her ally happens to be a male in this case. So to me, if someone's coming up to me, one of my allies is coming up to me and telling me about like this move they want to make, where they're voting to sort of keep in good with the minority, that's making me think, are they trying to keep their game plan? Like, are they trying to keep their fingers in every single pie? What if in the next vote they want to jump over to those people, that they want to still be able to use those people in case they want to turn on me? And I just think, like, Alex, Sarah, and Tobias, especially Tobias, like, they're not showing they're great at the game. Like, I mean, I'm loving Tobias because he is just like horrendous at this game. And I don't see them. They'll only go far for their challenge strength and no other reason. So I don't know why she's wanting to like maintain these relationships with these people on the other side. One, this early in the game, like it's the very first vote. She's already showing that she's a much bigger game player than what she had shown before. And two,
it's like, counter to her strategy, right? Because her strategy coming into the episode was, I'm going to sit back. I'm not going to make any bold moves early on in the game. And then she goes out and makes a very bold move very early on. So I feel like if she didn't tell Faraz and Garrick about it, there's going to be, you know, like, not that she had to ask permission. Like, I'm not on the Tom trend on this, but if she did at least tell them about the idea and get some buy-in, then it would have been something that's going to blow back on her.
I wasn't saying permission. I'm saying if it was like someone else's idea to tell her to go undercover, then her hands are clean in the sense that, like, it's not showing that she's like some strategic force or anything, but because she's the one initiating this whole thing, it's like, oh, I'm thinking stirring. Like, I'm playing 3D chess when everyone else thought I was playing 2D chess. And now everyone knows she's on the 3D level, you know? So yeah. I think it's going to blow back against her maybe like a little bit. Like, I don't think she's going to get voted out over it or anything. I think she's she's going to make it decently far in the game. But I just don't think it's a good move overall this early on in the game. Yeah.
Yeah, now, I think it's timing. I agree. Go ahead, Jenna. Mm-hmm. I think it's just timing-wise. The move itself is a good move, like, in principle. It's just doing it so early when she hasn't solidified and cemented the relationships. If she really is like lockstep with Faraz and they've been doing this for multiple tribals, maybe, or even, you know, maybe not tribals, just multiple weeks rather than the first three episodes, and she can confidently say, look, I'm with you. Do not worry. But tonight, for this purpose, I'm going to vote with them, right? Like, but that relationship isn't set in that firm foundation yet. And it might only just open up questions for Faraz. So again, the benefits of tying
and
yourself
now he knows.
To
yeah, he now absolutely. Knows that she is someone that is not opposed to going against the grain when it comes to voting and choosing her own path without consulting at least the alliance members. That's not a great sign. You want, you know, like I always say, variety and unpredictability is great in life, you know, it's the spice of life, but in Survivor you want predictability, and she's coming across as an unpredictable ally by doing what she's done so early in the game. So that's someone that I feel like a player of Faraz's caliber, or how we think he's going to play the game, because it's still very, very early days, but he's getting just enough of an edit throughout the three episodes to know that he's going to be a player that's going to be big in the season. He's got big targets to be, you know, to go one better than George, like he said here early on, and he wants to model his game slightly after George and got inspiration from him. So I do think he's going to be a big player this season, but that type of player is not going to want, like, a Mark would also not want that type of player around if they were to go into a swap situation and he finds out that she's thinking at all these different levels. So very, very risky moves here early on. Snuff saying 100, Kahuna, totally agree with you on that one. I do want to talk about Faraz a little bit, though. I want to move the conversation slightly on.
Can I just say one thing first? Just because I love women so much, I just want to say my opinion
was
actually echoing what Shannon Gus said on the Talking Tribal podcast. She had that exact same opinion that that it would have been good if Ferris
Garrick... twisted Shannon's words. Like, I don't think Shannon would have said that she needed to ask permission for the move.
I didn't say the permission.
Tom did say that very specifically, though.
I didn't say the permission thing. And I'm sorry, I don't have the script of what Shannon Guth said right here for me to read off. I'm trying to, you know, I'm not a nerd like Mucky. I don't take notes.
Like, you know, Eden quotes movies when it comes to Survivor. Tom Eden.
I quote strong, independent women. That's who I quote.
He steals their IP.
I just want to quickly jump in and say, so Tom has gone from Tom the misogynist to Tom has no original opinion, and he just takes other people's opinions. You know, he takes Shen and Gus's.
And then gives them credit.
How are you a podcaster, Tom, when you don't have any original opinions, all right? That's all I've got to say.
Nah, listen, let's move on from this one. For us, Mucky, what's your take on him over this first couple of episodes? Are you liking where he's positioned himself in the tribe? He's gone missing a little bit in some of the edit. For me personally, I thought how he dealt with Tribal Council and JLP was probably the best part of his game in the first three episodes, because he gave nothing. He gave so little to JLP, who wanted so much from him in Tribal Council.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely loving Faraz. You know, straight from preseason stuff, I knew I was going to like him. I knew he was going to be a big player this season. And I'm just so excited to see what he brings. He's already demonstrated that he's a smooth player, right? You know, he gave JLP nothing with how he was able to. I mean, even though it was Kirby who, like, I guess, initiated the move, I would say that Faraz definitely started that conversation going. You know, just from my opinion on how I kind of saw things, like, he started that conversation going, but Kirby's the one who took initiative and actually like put the plan all together. And so, yeah, I'm really loving what Faraz is doing this season. I'm really excited to see what he's going to bring.
Tardu saying Faraz doesn't have a poker face because he was smiling a few times or reacting to things. But still, when JLP asked him, he was talking in riddles. You know, he wasn't giving him anything. So I feel like he handled it reasonably well. Chad is also asking, has this podcast turned into a roast battle? I will just say, Mucky had his initiation when he first joined the podcast. We've now moved on. There is a new kid in town, and his name is Tom. Yeah. He is now getting initiated into the podcast properly. Like, Mucky had to deal with it for a very, very long time. So, Tom, just part of being part of the crew.
I love what Snuffed said. Tom needs a cuddle from Garrick. I mean, I need him to whisper sweet nothings into my ear, tell me it's going to be all right. I need to go up to him like Kelly and be like, Garrick, I'm stressed. I know. Can you hold me?
Yeah, like what a meltdown. Absolute meltdown by Kelly. Like that was another thing that for us did really well, was trying to like calm her down, Kuna, in that moment when she was like almost giving the game plan away. And they didn't know it, but Peter obviously had an idol. Things could have gone horribly wrong for them in this episode.
Yeah, and that's why, like, he did really well with Kelly, because she was, again, just throwing way too hard, like, everything at it, and, like, overacting to the nth degree, and Faraz just saying, hey, too much, like, reel it back in is very, very good of him. But I feel like he almost did the same thing at Tribal Council. Like, when he said, like, he dropped hints, and unless he was being specific to give a clear message while still... But he said, like, people need to be put in their place. You know, they need to learn a lesson or something along those lines. They need to be put in their place and be humbled. And, like, I was like, what are you doing? Like, shut up. Like, Peter's definitely going to use her idol now. And it turns out he was right, because the only reason why she didn't use her idol, I think, is because she had such a massive ego and thought she was no chance that she was going home. But, like, I was worried that he was giving away a little bit too much. And I feel like maybe Alex picked up on it. I don't know. Yeah. Like, when he's, like, I don't know if that was just in general or it was based off of what Faraz was saying. But Faraz is like, yeah, like, they're going to be put in their place. And then Alex automatically goes, hey, maybe if someone has an idol,
Here's where editing can be so powerful. Like, we don't know when he said that. We don't know if Alex's reaction to what he said was truly the reaction to what Faraz said at that moment. Like, editing can change the whole narrative of what happened at Tribal Council. And we know that Australian Survivor is good at creating those moments of drama within Tribal Councils. Like, I don't find myself bored at Tribal Council like I do in US Survivor a lot of the times these days, where I can kind of forward through most of it because most of the gameplay happens beforehand. And another thing that I will give Australian Survivor credit for, they've been good at it for a long time and they continue to be good at it, is telling us a story on how someone gets eliminated and why they're getting eliminated. So that by the end of this episode and the previous episodes, we understood why Frankie went home. We understood why Jess went home. We understood why Peta went home. She thought she was Barbie out there. But, you know, Ken couldn't save her. We understood the whole story. But in the US, it's always, aha, got you. We're twisting it on you. You thought
he was going
home. But now it's actually Kahuna, who we don't understand why the hell he's going home tonight. So I really do appreciate that kind of editing. But we are getting towards the end of this podcast here. So I do want to go around the room here and talk about who do we think is the best placed after week one. Who's the MVP of this week? And we'll make it hard. Let's truly choose only one player from each of us that we think is really well positioned at this point in the game to win it. And because Mucky is giving me that smile, I'm going to come to him last because I feel like he's about to give us his mucky take. So I'm going to start with someone that I can trust, like a predictable force within this podcast. Kahuna, who do you have at the moment as the person that you think is best placed to win this game?
Sneaky Steve!
Yeah! Sneaky Steve, baby!
An hour and 14 minutes before royalty is mentioned.
I think, like, people are mentioning Mark has got to be in the position, and I feel like that's the default position, but I want to take a little bit of a different angle. If Kirby can come out of this move that she's made clean, in that Faraz and Garrick don't have a worry about her and she solidifies it and she can actually get a little bit of information. So I know these are ifs, but I like what I'm seeing from her. And I feel like she could be that sitting in between position, which can unfortunately mean you're at the bottom of both. Like when you're in between, you're on the top of neither. So that is a danger for her. But if she can really solidify that with Faraz and turn this into something gold, I like what I'm seeing from Kirby.
Yeah. Tom, who do you have?
If you asked me at the start of the podcast, I would have said Mark, but after this podcast, I'm going to go with my cuddle buddy, Garrick. I think he's been playing great. He's really warm at night. Overall,
is he playing the Liz strategy? Is he getting on Faraz's back throughout this season and then sort of jumping out at the last minute to take control and win the game? Is that what you're thinking?
I mean, if Garrick's Liz, then that means I'm Shawnee. So three-time player. Three-time player right here, you know? Yeah.
Three-time first boot.
I mean, at least I play three times more than you would, Mucky. So.
Oh, shots fired.
Also, I bet you Mucky's going to say Eileen. And for no good reason whatsoever. I'm just putting it out there. Anyway.
All right, Mucky, you've got to change it up now. Who is your MVP of the week?
It's Eileen. Like
I wonder why. I wonder why.
No, Mucky, Hear me out, right? So
have you found out if she's into conspiracy theories at all? Like, does she believe in Bigfoot or aliens?
I do just want to publicly say Ikensu made a post. Her and her boyfriend have broken up. So there's an inroad. All right.
Hey, Eileen would not be happy about you choosing Ikensu over her in this podcast. This was your moment. And you've messed it up.
Well, because something though, right, is that, you know, when it comes to players like Eileen, right, you know, someone who is quite small and, you know, is a big fan of the game, especially when it comes to Australian Survivor, they don't tend to go quite deep. But I'm loving that, you know, in that cage reward challenge, like she smashed that, like, you know, she actually like won the point and stuff.
Yeah,
and so I think when it comes, like, obviously we haven't seen much from her now. I'm hoping we get to see her a bit more in the future, but I wonder
why we haven't seen her. It's almost like she's gonna get booted and she's not important to the story at all.
Exactly, Gabe. So I think that there's more to come with Eileen, and I think, you know, just based on how the gameplay has been this season, where it is very reverse Australian Survivor, you know, she could do great things this season. We'll just have to find out. But I'm just
giving the biggest edit to the people that are going home early at this stage. Like, all the big edits have been for the people that have left within the first three.
Exactly.
So you never know.
I'm just not a misogynist like Tom. I support.
She was involved in the decisions as well. Like, they involved her in the... And not like Raymond, like, he was involved in the decision. As soon as he walked away to help them, they immediately, like, said, so how about we make Raymond the second vote? So she's in the conversations and not getting turned on like that. So maybe.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, well, I guess I'll bring some you know, order to the podcast and put the obvious person out there. Clearly, Mark played the best first week of the show. Like, he ran the strategy. He was truly the silent hand that moved in the back and sort of placed his pawns in positions. And I feel like even like Eden thinks he is equal with Mark at this point and that they're making decisions together. But clearly, Mark is the real mastermind behind it. And he knows how to, I don't know, like, get the numbers. Like, I'm still in awe of how he got the two Vs to work with him.
Yeah.
When they were very close to Frankie. They actually said in the beginning, we like Frankie and Mark, which meant that there was a choice for them to be made at that point of where they were going to go. And they chose to go with Mark. So it clearly shows that he's got the skill set. We've seen him do pretty well in the challenges as well. I think he's an all-rounder. He's a great player. At some point, he may get caught out, but I can't fault him for anything in the first week. I think he played as perfect a game as you can going into your first three episodes of Survivor. I'm hoping that his reign lasts very long. The only potential fear I have for him is if they do go with that middle age alliance, that at some point they get rid of a lot of the strength around them and they just don't have the numbers to go into a merge and be effective, and the rebels just overrun them with numbers. That's where I see a potential weakness for him. I'd love to say Faraz as well, but we need to see a little bit more of him. But the editor is telling me he's going to do some things. Like, I just know, like, they're giving him a lot of time. He's getting some storyline. We're seeing his alliance with Garrick. We're seeing his alliance with Kirby, who I also think can be a great player. And I hope, I really hope your read on Kirby is right, because I feel like she could be a very fun player to watch long term in the game as well. She clearly has the mind for this game. She's got the strategy. And not many people know, but I studied sport and rec. I studied coaching as well. So we've got that in common as well. So, you know, I want to shout out to the fellow coaches out there that love their sport. You know, she's right. It does take a very strategic mind to get into that field. So hoping that she can carry out the torch really well this season. But those are kind of the people I'm shouting for. That is really it here for this week, as we broke down all of the action of the first three episodes, all of the highlights here on the podcast. It is quite difficult to talk about three episodes, but we hope that we touched on all of the things that you wanted us to talk about. If not so, leave a comment below. Let us know what you thought about the podcast. Please feel free to share this as well to other people that are fans of the show. You know, help get us, our name out there, so that more people can discover the channel. Put a like on it. Please consider subscribing. It does help massively with getting us out on the YouTube algorithm. But for now, everybody in the live, thank you so much. You were great. Grab your torches, head back to camp. We'll catch you guys next week. Bye.